Chapter 2. A lightning storm, can even happen when the air is warm, and I can hear that nothing calling out to me. I can feel that nothing reaching out for me. Casper, Seawolf. 2. Robin accepts Zorro's presence with little more than a soft noise of curiosity and a laborious sweep of her novel's next page. Deliberate, maybe thoughtfully so, which is remarkably better than how Zorro takes Robin's presence on the ship, at any rate. The rest of the crew are edgy only for hours, a day and a night. Chopper is the first to approach the wayward archaeologist, mumbling about files and checkups and peering at her hopefully from beneath the rim of his hat, and Robin goes uncomplaining into the doctor's realm. Nami and Usopp both seem to abort motions to follow, distrust or protectiveness urging them on, but neither decide to move once the door to the lounge clicks shut. Perhaps this is because Sanji is in the kitchen, rather than any trust for their new crewmate. But either way, Luffy reclines back on the Mary's head and is pleased by the sounds of his Nakama continuing their work. Breakfast the following morning is less of an awkward affair than it has been, but with the straw hats at the table and food all around, it is still an affair of noteworthy proportions. Robin is quiet and less pulled into conversation, but small smiles and watching eyes seem to be her perpetual state, so Luffy isn't concerned. Zoro, conversely, has only become more withdrawn since Alabasta, muttering less and keeping his silence more. Luffy worries but doesn't know what to say. With Zoro's solemnity, it is easy to forget he is even there. His quiet hinders his animation. Without a physical, tangible, perceivable form, he becomes but a sword to the crew, even if they do not mean to view him this way. After realizing this, Luffy takes to addressing Zoro with a voice slightly louder than necessary, hoping to draw out not only the spirit, but his friends into conversation, and then finds himself astonished when it is Robin who first responds to the captain's call. "Captain, if I may," she begins one afternoon, which is how she begins most of her conversations with Luffy, almost hesitantly, "if I may." It is a bright, brilliant day, and so is Luffy's smile when he bounds across the deck to where Robin is seated and enjoying her tea time meal. And they both look surprised, but for entirely different reasons. "When you converse with our resident sword spirit, do you imagine a material form beyond that of the Wado Ichimonji's blade?" Plonking himself down in the chair opposite, Luffy shakes his head at the question. Behind them, noises of Nami gardening and tending to her beloved trees continue, and the laughing between Chopper and Usopp as they hang out the washing carries far across the deck. "Would he perhaps prefer to manifest in a tangible form?" Robin continues. She offers a plate of biscuits to the captain, and Luffy quickly munches through two, licking crumbs from his cheek. "There are reports and legends of particularly powerful spirits achieving some manner of corporeality. They are vague on the methods of doing so, but I thought it something that he may wish to consider, given his place amongst the crew." She pauses momentarily to thank Sanji as he appears with a coffee refill. Luffy uses the lull, the flurry to be more accurate, given the cook's joyous proclamations, to mentally prod Zoro, checking his awareness. "Zoro looks like a human, right?" he asks, wondering if that's what Robin means. How Zoro came to be isn't something they have conversed before, but Luffy recognizes that this may be due to their chatting consisting mostly of present and future, rather than the woes of past and old. Prying into his Nakama's business is not Luffy's place. He is their captain, not their keeper, and their pasts are their own.
Not sure,
says Zoro, and Luffy immediately parrots his words, uncertainty and all.
I think I was human once, but not anymore. I can't really remember what I look like. It's not like I have easy access to mirrors, you know.
I'm sure we could procure a mirror from somewhere on the ship, Robin says. Yeah, Luffy cheers. Sanji'll have one. What? No, I don't, the cook denies, glowering an incredulous expression at the captain. One spiraled eyebrow creases downwards, deepening Sanji's affront, and Luffy winces at the sight of it. Robin laughs, the tittering sound serving to lessen some of Sanji's anger. Torn between scowling at his captain and fussing over the archaeologist, he seems to wobble in place for a moment, before his need to praise Robin's lamenting laugh wins out. Luffy pouts, but now that his obligation has been fulfilled, Sanji has no qualms against turning his ire towards the captain. And anyway, the mirror is a moot point if he can't materialize himself. You should worry about that first. Yeah, we should, Luffy agrees, placing a happy, heavy emphasis on the pronoun. Everyone can help out. It'll be like an adventure.
It's nothing like an adventure.
Deciding that this is simply wrong, Luffy doesn't repeat that out loud. Zoro isn't exactly the weirdest thing to ever happen to us, Sanji says, unknowingly agreeing to the spirit's self-deprecating mumble. Zoro's not weird, Luffy argues. Sanji's eye roll is a skillful integration of fond and exasperated. Maybe if his other eye were visible, it would be clear what he is trying to convey. That is exactly my point.
I think I just got complimented.
I think this is a delightful idea, Robin says, encouraging the conversation away from Sanji's temper. Turning to the katana now, she appraises it beyond its beautiful and shine. Have you ever attempted to materialize yourself before, Zoro-san?
Once or twice. But it's hard. I haven't worked out how to do it.
Eh? Luffy blurts, rounding on the word. He almost knees the table in his haste, threatening the array of plates and saucers that Sanji has lovingly laid there. Zoro's tried before? The spirit mumbles something indiscernible, likely the verbal equivalent of blushing and embarrassment.
Yeah, well,
he says, hushed under Luffy's wide-eyed stare.
It didn't do much at the time, so talking's easier, I guess.
Despite its impossibility, Zoro seems to admit an air of having just shrugged. Luffy answers with a wondrous noise, racking his brain for when he may have seen Zoro attempt to make himself more physical. Nothing comes to mind beyond a flash of something, like lightning but green, like the earth rising up and deep, quaking laughter of forests and caverns and all things arcane as shorelines and gold. It's not a human figure by any means, but the sensation is so irrefutably Zoro that Luffy can only assume that he has perceived the sword spirit on some nearly tangible level before. But when? As Luffy unwittingly scooped up the Wado Ichimonji for the first time? Robin makes a thoughtful sound and begins to swish her coffee, as if the swirl of bitter umber and burnt sienna can spell out sagacious notions to consume. If I'm correct in my presumption that others have wielded the Wado Ichimonji before our captain here, Zoro-san, have you ever spoken to any of your... forgive me, I cannot think of a more acceptable word than... The Wado Ichimonji sparks, firecrackers of light spitting against the table. A brilliant ember scorches Robin's shirt, but a hand brushes it away in an untroubled bloom of petals and dark devil fruit skin. Sanji emits a protesting noise and tries to bat the lightning away with a silver tray he carries. But Luffy, bothered only by the rush of unease from the katana's spirit, rubs a rubber thumb over the hilt of the blade.
No,
Zoro grumbles.
No one's heard me before.
No one but Luffy? Sanji blurts, still clutching the tray. He seems doubtful of the concept, overwrought, and is unabashed at questioning Zoro's word. How many people have had the Wado Ichimonji?
Dunno. Loads. Not all of them used me, though.
The blade was in my possession briefly, and I could not hear you, Robin notes, her tone the absent-minded of one piecing together a puzzle of evidence, thoughts, and circumstances laid beyond them.
Didn't want you,
Zoro replies, unapologetic. Luffy phrases the words a little nicer, but Robin seems to comprehend the spirit's reluctance nonetheless. So I could, theoretically, she asks, unconcerned by the hostility.
I don't know, all right. I don't try and talk to everyone who picks me up.
Why not? Luffy asks.
Waste of time, isn't it?
Zoro snaps, growling the words. He sighs then, long and heavy, and the Wado Ichimonji seems to glow for a moment, a sky warning of a storm ahead. Luffy opens his mouth to reply, to argue, question, deny, but Zoro cuts off further attempts at conversation by barking,
Are you done badgering me now?
Luffy relents, unwilling to push Zoro so disinclined. His abrupt quiet causes an eyebrow raise or two from Robin and Sanji, and the captain thinks of laughing it off before changing his mind and shaking his head. Zoro's not happy, is what he supplies instead, feeling rather than hearing the spirit withdraw. Yes, that does seem to be the case, Robin replies, direct as though she is entirely apathetic to this. She sips her coffee, adding, It must be a lonely existence. Which seems to be all she has to say on the matter for now. Sanji glances one-eyed at the captain, or the sword, maybe, and then pats his pockets in search of a cigarette. He tucks the tray under one arm so he can light it, then colors faintly when Chopper appears at the top of the stairs and scrunches his nose at the smell. The little doctor blushes too, but makes his way over without commenting on Sanji's unhealthy habit. Something else is bothering him, if his nervy approach and wide, coal-black eyes are anything to go by. Luffy leans down to ruffle Chopper's fur, glad and guilty for the distraction. Only, Chopper diverts the conversation back towards Zoro's gruff reluctance. Is there something wrong? He asks, peering up at the captain from beneath his bubblegum pink hat. You all smell uneasy. Is there anything I can do to help? I want to help. What can I do? Luffy blinks at the doctor's keen perception, and then blinds Chopper's watery eyes with a smile. Zoro's a bit sad, he says simply, sliding the sheath from its place at his side. I think he could do with a hug from someone small and cute and really fluffy. Do you think there's someone on the ship that could do that? I could, Chopper chimes, perking up hopefully. I mean, only if you think I'm fluffy enough to meet the criteria. Luffy laughs, passing Wado Ichimonji into the reindeer's carrying hooves. If he gets all grouchy at you, just use your secret weapon, yeah? The captain says, patting Chopper's hat. My secret weapon? Uh-huh. He's weak to your big eyes and your cute nose. Really? Chopper gasps, looking between Luffy and Robin for confirmation. And Sanji, having not quite slunk out of earshot, almost inhales his cigarette. He coughs, hacking around a lung full of smoke, and wheezes something that sounds suspiciously like, Puppy dog eyes, before retreating across the deck. Oh, it wouldn't surprise me, Robin says, smiling down at the awed doctor as he clutches the blade close to his chest. Luffy merely laughs. Luffy, why do you have my compact mirror? Seizing his silly expressions at the glass and snapping the little mirror shut, Luffy flops his head back over the side of the sofa to spy Nami standing there, hands pressing firm into her hips. He grins at her upside-down fury, wondering if her frown had always been so large, and watches as the navigator's diamond gaze flicks from his face to the mirror and back to his smile again. "We want to know what Zoro looks like," is what Luffy says by way of explanation, still grinning even as Nami huffs and scoops his elasticated head back into a more acceptable position. "Who's we?" she asks, motioning for the mirror. "And why does that involve you going through my stuff?" "Sanji said he didn't have one," Luffy replies, obediently handing the object over. He's been uncharacteristically careful with it, ensuring no dents or harm befell it. He made sure, but Nami checks her possession with a critical eye anyway. "Well, Sanji's a liar," she says, laughing shortly. "That doesn't mean you can go through my things, though." Luffy whines, thoroughly chided under her glare. "Sorry, Nami," he says, pouting pathetically at the compact mirror. If neither Sanji nor Nami let him use their mirrors, how is he going to find one for Zoro? Nami sighs heavily, softening at her captain's disheartened expression. She rolls the circular mirror in her hands, seeming to contemplate giving it back. Eventually, she sags, tension rolling out of her shoulders. "All right, Spell. What's this got to do with Zoro, and where is he anyway?" Chopper's giving him a hug. "We were talking about how it would be cool if Zoro could be physical, so that everyone could see and hear him and stuff. But Zoro got all sad and grumpy because he said he hadn't spoken to anyone before, and Robin said he was lonely." "Zoro can physically manifest himself? Wait. She shakes her head, cutting off Luffy's immediate reply, and then sits down beside him on the sofa. The captain scrambles to make room for her, flinging his rubber limbs out of the way. "He hasn't spoken to anyone at all?" Nami asks, then trouble tugging her pale and freckled features into a frown. "Nuh-uh, just me," he said. "And so, the mirror. Zoro said he can't remember what he looks like, so if he could manifest himself, then he could use a mirror to find out." "Right," Nami says, considering her captain's enthusiastic expression, before appearing to come to a decision. "Right." She hands back the mirror. Luffy fumbles with the object for a moment, before cocking his head in question, as though just realizing what he holds. Nami shrugs as she returns to busying herself about the lounge, glancing, or not glancing, at Luffy pointedly. "Guess he'll be needing it then, won't he?" she says. "But you break it, and I'll throw you overboard, hear me?" "Hear you," Luffy replies, and Captain and Navigator share a grin. News spreads faster than wildfire about the Mary. By dinner that night, everybody is aware of the first mate's predicament. Chatter around the table is full of supernatural talk and ambiguously helpful suggestions on how to further Zoro's corporeality. And even the spirit himself is encouraged by the crew's unanimous determination to bring this change about. The crew, bar Luffy, take turns handling the blade to lay Zoro's doubts that they won't be able to hear him to rest. They can't, as it turns out, as they are disappointed to find, although Usopp claims to hear something when awkwardly cradling the sword. Sanji mumbles about imaginations and placebos and dutifully returns to serving drinks. But Usopp's frown is a little too deep, and Zoro's curious noise is a little too thoughtful, and Luffy wonders if his sniper lied at all. At any rate, Zoro seems to have expected the crew's selective deafness, merely shrugging their apologies off with a huff and a sigh. He sounds pleased, touched even, that they even tried. And if Luffy holds the Wado Ichimonji closer than usual for the rest of the meal, then his Nakama say nothing about it at all. "Zoro wants to be corporeal, right?" Luffy asks later, An afterthought, almost, as he wipes a cloth along the Wado Ichimonji's blade with a careful hand. Chaka had shown him how to maintain a katana back in Alabasta, happy to provide the necessary equipment and knowledge after Vivi's concerns. But Luffy has never been any good at cleaning. The first time he tried, Luffy had knocked a whole bottle of oil across the deck, and Usopp, who had volunteered to oversee the operation, had almost lost 3 fingers and his nose as the Wado Ichimonji slipped out of their hands. Nami had not been impressed at their antics, but then she rarely is, grilling them relentlessly about their stupidity while Chopper fussed, fretted, and rushed around for plasters. Sanji had stood behind her looking equally disapproving, but Luffy had heard him laughing at Usopp's terrified squawking. Luffy's following attempt at cleaning the katana had been more of a success, but that was probably only because Nami refused to let him reattempt it without supervision. Bravely, Usopp had agreed to help again, but the navigator hadn't been appeased until Robin sweet-talked a promise into keeping an eye on them. Apparently, the entire cleaning process was possible one-handed. The katana never meant to touch the floor. But Luffy has found that he can do very few things one-handed. Fortunately, with Robin watching from the upper deck, the captain had the means to use both of his hands while her devil fruit ability kept the Wado Ichimonji levitated over his knees. Since then, Luffy hasn't gotten much better at the actual cleaning process, but at least no one is in danger of losing their fingers.
If it's possible, then sure,
Zoro says. Doesn't Zoro think it's possible?
Well, I've never managed it before, have I? You'd think I could have done it by now.
Luffy isn't sure about that, doubting that Zoro ever had the incentive to achieve corporeality when nobody could hear him, but he says nothing. He's reluctant to bring up Zoro's solitary existence again, at least to Zoro anyway. So he just makes a thoughtful noise and puts aside the cloth, picking up the marshmallow-like Uchiko ball instead.
What?
I didn't say anything, Luffy says, whistling innocently. At Zoro's replying silence, the captain clamps his tongue back between his teeth, methodically tapping the Uchiko ball against the blade.
I can hear you thinking.
Really?
Not literally, idiot.
Luffy emits a disappointed sound, but doesn't share his thoughts. And Zoro huffs, submitting to the blatant deflection.
You missed a spot,
he says after a moment. No, I didn't. Where?
Near your hand. Look closer.
Skeptical, Luffy takes the blade from Robin's extra hands. The limbs sway for a second like 2 fleshy, grotesque flowers, and then disappear in a burst of petals as Luffy lifts the katana to his face. He can't see any obvious damage, but Zoro is the sword, he supposes, and so Zoro knows best, squinting his eyes to inspect it further. The katana flares, light exploding from its polished edge, and Luffy's shriek to the high heavens is so loud that crashes resound around the Mary, the crew simultaneously catapulting from their lazy afternoon in surprise. Stunned, Luffy lays sprawled on the deck for a long moment, ears echoing with the howl of Zoro's laughter. Nami berates the sword later, unable to fine him for the ink she had spilled, and Sanji's disapproval is sincere this time as he threatens to impale the sword with the remains of a shattered glass. But Chopper is the only one who receives a grumbled apology, his fur still sticky with whatever concoction he had been trying to mix.
Zoro's mean,
Luffy says with a smile, completely unfazed by the trick. The sword replies with a low chuckle, sounding equally unmoved by the severity of Nami and Sanji's threats.
Your face was worth it.
Luffy is sure it was.
What about Chopper, though? He looked pretty angry.
He looked like a kicked puppy, truthfully, because Chopper doesn't do angry, and Zoro makes an uncomfortable sound.
I wouldn't worry. He'll probably just add another tally to the list.
What list? Zoro's voice drops, embarrassed. He replies, mumbling with the tone of a man regretting his life decisions.
He has a hugs Zoro owes me when he's tangible list. I think he's trying to condition me or something.
With hugs? Luffy laughs, taking great delight in Zoro's mortified moan. That doesn't sound so bad. Grumbling under his breath, Zoro doesn't seem to argue.
He threatened to use Heavy Point.
Oh, I hope he does, Luffy says, entirely unsympathetic to the sword's plight. He tries to imagine Chopper scooping Zoro's physical representation into a bear hug, but with so little information to go on, only images of Wado Ichimonji come to mind. Luffy doubles over with laughter anyway, desperate for such a collision between his cutest and gruffest Nakama.
Stop laughing!
But it's funny! Can you imagine?
Yes.
Zoro sighs, cutting him off.
I can.
Their journey beckons them upwards, the log pose reaching to the sky. Nami says, "You have got to be joking," and demands they cast a vote before throwing themselves into the will of the Grand Line. Luffy, Robin, and, albeit grudgingly, Sanji vote for Skypiea, leaving the decision a tie. "Zoro can decide," Luffy declares, still wringing water from his shirt after the deep-sea dive. He feels sodden and uncomfortable, but won't let that dissuade him. And he supposes, even now, on the safety of the Mary, the sea hates him with the vengeance that pulls the tides. Nami gives him the look and argues, "Zoro's thoughts and opinions are pretty skewed through your mouth, Luffy." "I won't lie," he replies, more amused than offended at his navigator's doubt. She's as keen as ever and brash enough to feel unashamed for calling him out. And Luffy is pleased to know that the line between captain and crew is so easily ignored. "Swear it!" Nami's eyes only narrow. Luffy stares back, grin open and free, and the rest of the crew begin to make uncertain, amused, and mildly irritated noises. "Zoro-san," Robin says, dismissing rather than interrupting the confrontation unfolding across the deck. "If you would be so kind as to cast your vote, perhaps a spark of that lightning of yours for yes to Skypiea, and nothing for no." "Wait!" Usopp says, after the Wado Ichimonji crackles and flares, and Luffy cheers wildly. Nami, burying exasperation in her hands, groans loudly. "Zoro can produce lightning, can't he?" "Yeah?" the captain says, swinging the blade up over his head as Robin clarifies. "We have yet to discuss the process behind the phenomenon, but yes, this appears to be the case."
"Isn't it cool?" Luffy breathes.
"No, well, yeah, I mean..." Usopp shakes his head, raven curls bouncing as he tries to find the words. "He could communicate with it, couldn't he? He just answered a yes-no question. It's not much, but he could talk to us?" As one, the crew blink and turn their attention to the katana being paraded over their heads.
"But Luffy's the only one made of rubber," Chopper points out, pondering the idea with a sad little smile. "Wouldn't it hurt to hold him if he did that?"
"I doubt Zoro's stupid enough to electrocute us while we're holding him," Sanji says, patting the reindeer on the head. It's probably meant to be reassuring, and Chopper does perk up under the affection, but the cook's grumbling tone doesn't resonate with the rest of the crew.
"I don't know," Nami says, mumbling under her breath. "He did just vote for Skypiea."
"Then all we have to do is not carry the Wado Ichimonji around, right? I mean, Luffy's basically the only one who carries it. He, Zoro, anyway. And Zoro can still hear us," Usopp presses, glancing between them all. He shrugs at the concordant uncertainty, looking faintly embarrassed now. "It was just an idea."
"It's a good idea," Luffy bellows, enthusiasm soothing his crew's concern. "You should all definitely talk to Zoro."
One spark for yes, two for no, Sanchi suggests as the crew shrug, accepting this turnabout of events. Can Zoro even control it to that degree? The Wado Ichimonji flares once, crackling briefly in Luffy's hand, and then again in quick succession, like tiny white fireworks scattering down the sheath. So, was that a yes or a no? Usopp asks.
I believe that was Zoro-san merely proving a point, Robin explains. Perhaps we should explore the possibilities this brings at a later date. It would be advantageous to expand the vocabulary that Zoro can convey, especially if a physical manifestation becomes something beyond his reach.
You mean like a code? Nami asks, adopting an expression as thoughtful as Robin's. The two women seem to share a moment, or a message, each humming as though concurring to a plan. We could probably come up with something.
I could work with that.
Zoro agrees, sparking once for the benefit of the rest of the crew.
But I thought we were going to Skypiea for now.
Yeah! Luffy roars, his seemingly unexplained yell making his Nakama jump. They grumble, clutching their chests, and only Robin laughs at the novelty of the holler. Let's go to Skypiea! You know what? Sanji says, patting the torn and frayed pockets of his jacket for a packet of cigarettes. His hands shake as he shoves a cigarette in between his teeth. But compared to the rest of his aching joints and bones, they have remained relatively unscathed. Refusing to function until he curses at it, the lighter clicks sweet relief into his lungs, the first sharp inhale ebbing away some of the pain. Then the cook peers at his watching captain from behind a sticky, bloodied fringe, and Luffy grins back. This was a terrible idea. Luffy snickers. From the back of the boat, and the only member currently rowing, Usopp joins the conversation with a long, drawn-out whine. Even my eyelashes hurt, Luffy. I hope the others are okay, because I think I'm coming down with... I think this place is great, Luffy says, as though the number of bruises he has acquired positively correlates to how much fun he is having. I'm sure the others are having a great time. Usopp doesn't seem to agree. Because they were kidnapped. Yeah? Luffy says, laughing. Because he knows that. And? People don't usually have a good time when they're kidnapped. I should know. There was this one time when I was 7. No, 8. Nami-san and Robin-san better be okay, Sanji says, not really interrupting, but rather speaking over Usopp's fabricated memory. One single curly eyebrow scowling darkly. If so much as one hair on their heads. They're with the Mary, right? Usopp says, sitting up sharply in a burst of confidence. Lie forgotten, he hastens to exhibit some bravado. Surely they'll be fine as long as they don't stray far. The idea is so preposterous that Luffy wheezes with laughter. Over his head, the cook and sniper exchange a pointed glance. Right, Usopp murmurs, shaking his head in disbelief. Of course they wouldn't do that. Yet, not even the Mary is safe in this forest, as they are dismayed to discover upon regrouping with their missing Nakama. The stench of smoke lingers heavy in the air, sorrowful gray and scorching black over their heads. And Luffy runs his fingers along the ship's banister, wincing at the charred splinters beneath his skin. Chopper wails as he explains the fight that took place. His hat is crooked, the top singed like a campfire marshmallow, and clumps of his fur are scattered around the deck. It's a grisly scene, and Luffy isn't the only one frowning as they survey the damage to the Mary. They decide to camp out away from the ship, reluctant to allow any more harm to befall her. Luffy is glad to have his Nakama reunited, even if two are worse off for wear. Chopper insists that he's fine, but still allows the crew to fuss over him in turn. When the night rolls in through the swamp, the reindeer has curled half asleep on Luffy's lap, and it is now that their bellies are full and the fire roars before them that the Straw Hat Pirates return to talk to Skypiea and Gold. Robin explains how they discovered that Jaya and Skypiea together form the treasure map skull they've been searching for, and Zoro chips in occasionally with his own interpretation of events.
"It wasn't that big of a deal,"
he says when the archaeologist explains how they couldn't communicate with him without receiving electrical shocks. Only this morning they had proposed a temporary solution to Zoro's transcendence, but it relies so heavily on Luffy's presence that their unforeseen separation seems to have thrown a spanner in the works. "They'll have to think of something else," Luffy supposes, drumming his fingers against the Wado Ichimonji's scabbard. His other hand continues fluffing up Chopper's fur, much to the doctor's sleepy delight. The captain prods Zoro to see if he's listening to the reindeer's adorable crooning. "If nothing else, this is an incentive to try and achieve a more tangible form," Robin says, sipping a cup of some herbal, poignant tea. Sanji's own infusion. She never seems to be without a mug of something lovingly prepared, be it coffee, tea, or any of the other brews Sanji experiments with. And Luffy has no idea how she manages to consume so much caffeine without needing the bathroom every 2 minutes.
"It's not like you were listening to me anyway,"
Zoro grumbles. And when Luffy repeats it with high, curious eyebrows, the rest of the scouting party, that is, Robin and Nami, laugh. "That's because you're directionally hopeless," the navigator argues, wiping a tear from her eye. "I've never met someone capable of getting lost in a straight line before." "Really?" Usopp asks, as Sanji cracks a grin beside him. "It is quite remarkable," Robin notes. "Every time we went in the right direction, he kicked up a fuss," Nami adds, for the benefit of the others, still sniggering as she recalls what was sure to have been a long, winding adventure through the forest. Luffy has no doubt that what they're saying is true, already witness to the peculiarities of Zoro's internal compass, and he laughs along with them at the katana's expense.
"I did not kick up a fuss. You were going in the wrong direction."
"Right, and who's the navigator here?"
"Oh, shut up."
Nami barks a laugh, ginger hair spilling from the elastic tie. "No, you shut up," she retorts, squabbling back at the katana as an older sister would, berating the misbehavior of their younger brother. Sanji predictably takes offense on her behalf, which Luffy still thinks is all sorts of ridiculous, given that she's perfectly capable of beating anybody she wants into the ground. "Hey, don't you tell Nami to shut up!" Less predictably, Zoro seems to take offense in turn.
"You picking a fight, Curly Brow?"
he snaps, and Luffy only thinks to paraphrase the insult after Sanji glows red with outrage. "What did you just say?" Now unwilling to repeat the rest of Zoro's derogatory reply, Luffy smacks his lips together, staring wide, innocent eyes at the protesting cook. "Sanji!" Usopp squeaks, as if Sanji's temper is truly something to be afraid of. "You're yelling at a sword." "Yeah, and it's hilarious," Nami says. "Oh, I know there's a thick-headed arsehole in there somewhere," Sanji growls, clamoring to his feet with none of his usual grace. For a man so light on his feet in battle, he can be so awfully heavy-footed at times. "Come out here and I'll show you a fight, you scatterbrained!" The Wado Ichimonji doesn't so much as spark in warning before combusting into a smog of white light and searing opal flames. Luffy flings the sword away from him, away from Chopper, dozy and unprotected by an enduring rubber skin, and throws a hand out to stop Sanji in his tracks as a thunderstorm explodes within the camp. Sure of nothing but the snap of electricity in the air, for a second Luffy thinks he sees a figure, an arm, a flash of sea green, and a large hand cut with scars lunging out. And Sanji jerks back, falling hard out of reach. Nami shrieks, jumping up, and Robin's devil fruit blooms to protect them from the blitz of ashes and cinders raining down. Usopp yells, shielding his eyes, and Chopper ducks under Luffy's arm. The white lightning and fire pouring from the blade snuffs out like a candle, and the Wano Ichimonji clatters to the earth. Luffy breathes out, puffing shock and condensation into the night. The campfire spits once, then twice, and begins to smoke as the last of its embers crackle and die. Silence swallows the camp, thick and obscure darkness settling upon them in the aftermath of the storm. Robin's devil fruit hands flutter away. "What the hell?" Nami breathes. Part of her hair is singed, the fiery strands up in flames. She extinguishes it with clammy hands, her staggered expression rapidly morphing into anger. "Have I lost my eyebrows?" Usopp pipes. "Don't even mention your eyebrows," Sanji growls, propping himself up on his elbows. Dirt covers his hands from where he skidded on the ground, but he is unharmed enough to glower as he clambers to his feet. Luffy heaves a relieved sigh and then peeks under his arm to check Chopper for any damage. Uncontrolled or not, whatever that explosion had been, Luffy knows that Zoro would never forgive himself if Chopper, more than anyone, came to harm. "Chopper's okay? Everyone's okay?" Various confirmations resound back at him. Sanji, because he's protective, brave, and stupid, stalks over and scoops up the Wado Ichimonji to give it a piece of his mind. "What was that? Hey, you stupid arsehole. Someone could have gotten seriously hurt. Oi, Zoro, are you listening to me? Hey!" Nami snatches the katana and says to it in a low, haunting voice, "Never do that again," before lobbing the scabbard over to Luffy. "That was insane," Usopp says, the sound of his thundering heart evident in his wavering tone. "Yes, it was quite a shock," Robin says, amusing only herself with the joke. "Is Zoro okay?" Chopper asks, unhesitating as he reaches out and lays a hoof against the sheath in Luffy's hand. Luffy has absolutely no idea, but when prompted, their gruffest, lightning-throwing Nakama doesn't respond. Concerned, he draws the blade to check for any damage. Although, the lightning has never self-inflicted the Wado Ichimonji with damage before. But there's nothing he can see. The Daito katana as sharp as ever as it catches the moonlit glow. He sheathes the blade, hating that there is nothing he can do. "So did anyone else see?" Sanji begins, after a terse moment in which the crew seems to succumb to their own thoughts. Having already lit a cigarette and smoking it so furiously that he might as well be eating it, he is now attempting to get the campfire going again. Robin blooms two hands to help him, and Sanji smiles so brightly that it could probably illuminate the entire clearing. "See what?" Usopp asks, scrubbing at his goggles as though this will improve his past self's vision. Sanji shrugs as the fire clicks and sparks to life. Smoke begins to billow up into his face, obscuring his expression from view. "Dunno, I thought I saw Zoro for a second, but it was hard to tell with all the light." "I saw him too," Luffy exclaims, perking up. He grins at his Nakama's startled expressions. He and Sanji apparently being the only to lay eyes on Zoro's semi-tangible form, but then pouts as he recalls the sword's subsequent silence. "But he's not saying anything now." Sanji sits back, rolling the cigarette between his fingers. "Probably sulking," he says, unconcerned. "He might be hurt," Chopper argues, rising to the katana's defense. His fur ruffles up as he springs from Luffy's lap, but the captain scoops him back in as Chopper's worry gets the best of him. "And what if he is? How am I supposed to treat him? I've checked all my textbooks, but there's nothing about this." I think we were more at risk, Usopp says, trying to soothe the doctor. It was like that lightning bolt, the one back at Angel Island. I can't imagine what it might be like to get hit by that. Let's not find out, Sanchi grumbles. Lightning bolt? Chopper says, sounding just as frantic as before. Yeah, apparently the people of Angel Island have this god dude, an L or something, who throws lightning at them if they speak out against him or betray him in any fashion, Usopp explains in a softer tone, clearly realizing that his attempt at distracting the doctor has done a terrible job. He almost killed Connus, but she's okay. But there was just this huge lightning strike, and he trails off with a shrug, looking quite uncomfortable with the memory. Luffy can empathize, remembering the crash of light and energy and the way the air itself seemed to crackle, electrostatic sparks flickering in the aftermath. That's awful, Nami says. No wonder everyone's terrified. Luffy frowns, unsettled by the comparison that his crew are implying between Zoro and Skypiea's god. He doubts they mean it in earnest, but he finds himself speaking up anyway. Zoro's nothing like that. It was probably an accident. Perhaps the release of energy is a byproduct of Zoro-san attempting to manifest himself, Robin speculates, as the rest of the crew mentally backtrack the conversation to correct their blunder. We should take note of any more occurrences like this as he tries again. Hang on. What about that crazy storm back on Loketown? Sanji asks. Usopp clicks his fingers and makes an, oh yeah, noise of comprehension. That can't have been natural, right, Nami? The navigator shakes her auburn head, indicating that it hadn't. It was too specific, even for weather that close to the Grand Line. We've not seen anything else like it, and nothing like that has been reported in East Blue before. The conversation is momentarily interrupted by the splashing of Robin pouring herself another drink, but directing attention towards herself may have been the archaeologist's intention. What happened? She prompts, offering the teapot to the crew. Sanji takes it from her with a show, setting it back by the fire, then points over to the captain and grumbles, "Idiot over there almost got himself killed." "I was almost executed," Luffy clarifies, gleeful despite Chopper and Robin's astonishment. But this storm came out of nowhere to save him.
And you had the Wado Ichimonji on you at the time?
Robin asks. Luffy racks his brain, thinking back to Loketown, the streets paved with gold and the cold press of the execution block against his throat. Unsure, he vaguely recalls the sensation of somebody at his side, perhaps reaching over him, shielding him. But the memory is hazy with the thundering of the execution stand crumbling around him. Yeah, I think so. I couldn't reach it because of the handcuffs. Didn't the lightning come from the sky, though? Usopp ponders, rubbing his chin thoughtfully. Zoro seems to come from his blade. To answer this question, the crew turns as one to Nami. She rolls her eyes. Ground-to-cloud strikes can occur, but they're rarer. But it wasn't a natural occurrence anyway. Thunderstorms can dissipate quickly, but I'm talking half an hour, not under a minute. The cloud's life cycle must have been sped up, and there was a cloud, but Zoro can't produce those either. Unless they're, like, really small, Luffy says, enjoying the idea of a train of little clouds bobbing out of the Wado Ichimonji. She gives him the look. That'd be really cool, Chopper says, enthused by the same mental image. Nami gives him the look, too, but a notably less severe one. Is Zoro a sword or a climatact? Sanchi deadpans. He discards the remains of his cigarette and then reaches for the packet, contemplating another one. Whatever he is, he's definitely an idiot, Nami says. You hear that, Zoro? Luffy blinks, waiting, but not a word is spoken by the first mate. Feeling helpless, he shrugs at his navigator,
acutely aware of how his crew all frown at Zoro's persistent silence. With the Wado Ichimonji impeccable and without a verbal response from Zoro, they have no way of gaining insight into his well-being. Zoro could be sulking, angry, or blaming himself for what happened. Or he could be hurt, or unaware, or perhaps even trying to say something, but it is Luffy that cannot hear, and they have no way of knowing. That's a failing as a captain, if nothing else. Somebody fixes the Mary overnight. Their work uninterrupted by the fog, the crew's snores, and the yawning, sleepy rotations of the night watch. Clanging fills the drawn-out hours, the ones the living never see. But the Straw Hat Pirates sleep on unaware, and Luffy deeper than most. He dreams. His eyes are gold again, his smile is lightning sharp. He walks along a path of green that ripples as he steps, emerald roils of waves that sway and cascade out to sea. Skypiea's skyline flashes above him, cotton candy cloud torn only by a silhouette against the sun. The Going Merry, he realizes, watching it sail past overhead. Grinning up at it, he reaches out as though even rubber can stretch that far, and notes with some surprise that scars bestrew his hand. His palm aches with cuts and scabs, and bruises violet and yellow seep beneath the damaged skin. And it looks as though the blood has stained his hand forever, whoever's it may be. "Can you speak?" somebody calls, speaking from so far away that he may as well be listening to the stars, may as well be talking back to the sun and all its resplendent, freckled hues. "Can you tell me your name?" He tilts his head, glaring up at the clouds as they glimmer atop the wind. The sky they hide is ocean greens and blues, a mirror of the ground below. He thinks, "That's such a stupid question," and opens his mouth to say, "Zoro, are you any good at cutting through rock?" Luffy asks, peers at the katana expectantly. It's a bit of a long shot. He doesn't think swords are made for carving through mountainsides, but he can't think of any other way of escaping this weird, lukewarm, surprisingly pungent cave. He waits a moment for a reply, then waits a moment more, and when it becomes apparent that Zoro's silence still persists, Luffy smacks his lips together and casts his gaze back out across the cave. The walls are a strange, fleshy color, and he has hit them more times than he can count, but still they stand unbroken and strong, occasionally oozing a substance that squelches when he touches it. "Would you be mad if I tried cutting it anyway?" Luffy continues, appraising the thickness of the walls. The Wado Ichimonji has proven itself pretty sharp, but he worries about causing an excessive amount of damage. A sword, after all, is replaceable, but a Nakama is not. A huff puffs his fringe from his face. Risking his Nakama is one thing he will not do, so Luffy figures he'll just have to locate another way out, or wait for one of his crew to come searching for their wayward captain. He hopes to locate the former, but ultimately bumps into the latter, although Nami is just as surprised as he is when she plummets from seemingly nowhere and crashes into one of the many heaps of gold that seem to be lying around. Caves are a good place to hide gold, Luffy knows, although he had always thought that burying it was part of the process. How have I ended up with a captain too stupid to realize he's been eaten by a snake? Nami despairs, notably after she does a double take and squeals at the goblets and coins scattered around. Her anger is somewhat mollified by the gleeful shine to her eyes, enough so that Luffy dares to ask the most obvious question between them. "When was I eaten by a snake?" Nami wails into the pile of gold. "Why me?" she cries, apparently not expecting an answer when she adds,
Why can't Zoro be corporeal? Then he can deal with all of this.
Luffy has been sailing with Nami long enough to know that asking, all of what, will probably get him killed. The list of things that are likely to cause him irreversible harm only increases once they manage to escape the python's digestive system. Hey, Nami, look at that giant snake! But Enel, as it turns out, is not one of them. Traversing God's territory throws them up through the clouds and then back down to the earth again. Enel's lightning is an overpowering force, a careless hand ripping open the sky. But Luffy will not be deterred. A promise to ring the golden bell was made, and he is going to avenge his fallen Nakama, protect the one still standing, and strike Skypiea's ancient bell even if it kills him.
Hey, Nami, Luffy says, drawing his navigator's attention away from the humongous beanstalk climbing up into the sky. Exhausted, his Nakama are slumped around him, some more worse for wear than others. Sanji, relentless, ridiculous, kind-hearted Sanji, had been still for a minute too long before gasping, wheezing, and spluttering into Death's retreating face. It is a minute Luffy will never get back, just as it is one Sanji will never realize he lost. They're okay, or they will be, but they all deserve their rest now. So Luffy plunks his hat on top of his head and looks up through the skyline, daring God and Enel to come thundering down.
What's that thing people say? He asks, smiling at Nami's weary smile.
Oh, we should fight lightning with lightning, right? We could do that.
Fire, Luffy, she despairs.
Usopp gives a weak chuckle from where he's slouched against the base of the beanstalk.
You fight fire with fire, not lightning. You'll need to find something that doesn't conduct electricity to fight Enel.
Eh? Luffy replies, trying not to show his disappointment. He doesn't have any fire, which is a shame.
Like what?
Like rubber?
The Wado Ichimonji flares, pulsing blue, but Luffy's resulting squawk is high-pitched with flabbergast, not pain.
Zoro! Hey!
He bellows, wrenching the Wado Ichimonji from his belt loop and scrutinizing its beautiful sparks.
You're awake! Where have you been? Are you okay? You were really quiet and we were all worried. Oh yeah! Hey, Nami, I conduct electricity, don't I?
What? No, Luffy! Nami says, shaking her head in what could be a fond manner, as the captain and first mate reunite. Her expression suggests a desire to give Zoro a piece of her own mind, but relief seems to win out with a roll of her eyes.
Rubber insulates electricity.
Luffy halts his exuberant yelling to make a thoughtful sound.
Is that a good thing?
That's a good thing,
Zoro rumbles, just as Nami blurts,
Oh my god, rubber! Luffy, you're made of rubber! Your devil fruit actually has a use for something.
Hey, it has lots of uses. Look, see, I can even stretch my...
Finish that sentence and I will end you.
He whines.
But look! No, stop it. I don't want to demonstrate... Luffy!
Luffy does not believe in fate. If he wants something, he fights for it. And nobody... Not coincidence, not chance, and not even probability will stand in his way. Thus, he believes it is not fate that thwarts Enel's supremacy, but a people in riot and a god's single mistake, an Achilles heel in the form of a king with the heart of a pirate. Legends will say otherwise, but truly, Luffy cares little for those two. He cares for his Nakama, his dream, and theirs, and he wants only the greatest adventures in the time he has been sailing under the sun. But perhaps the will of D is not something to be denied after all. Mary doesn't make it. Water 7 becomes a grave of fire. The world government flag lights up in flames.
The Soga King comes and goes, a brave masked man bound by a friendship that he cannot let go. And Usopp returns to them in the end, because Luffy has chosen his crew, and he'll be damned before letting any of them slip away. Robin cries. She spends the Thousand Sunnies maiden voyage cooped up in the library organizing her books, speaking to no one but history and his voices printed in tomes. At a loss for what to do, Luffy sits by the door to offer something of a presence, comfort, or a guard. And though the archaeologist doesn't once emerge throughout the day, he wonders if it helps to know that he is there. Sanji is the only other crew member to venture into Robin's space. He brings her coffee occasionally, only to have to leave it by the door. And though Luffy accepts that Robin wishes for time to collect herself, he has to put his foot down when the cook works himself into distress. They eat lunch together, all three of them, sitting out in the corridor and not saying a word. Robin's skin is smudged with ink, and Luffy's back is sore from immobility. But the sandwiches are delightful, and there is solace in the quiet. And when Luffy whines for meat and Sanji threatens to kick him overboard, Robin laughs as if she means it, her eyes crinkled with mirth. She leaves the library door open for the rest of the day. But it is, in fact, only Frankie that wanders into the bibliophilic realm. Electric blue hair with a personality to match, there is no doubt that Frankie is well-suited for their crew. His love for the Sunny is admirable, a true reflection of Usopp's compassion towards the Mary, and all that she had represented. And he is proud to introduce the crew to the many quirks of their new lion-headed ship. Robin is no exception. And so Frankie coaxes her out of the library before dinner to provide a grand tour of what the Sunny has to offer. If the tour just happens to pass every single member of the crew, if the crew just happened to have their own ways of reassuring the archaeologist, reassuring themselves that she's fine, and if Robin notices their fretful behavior, then she says nothing about it. Not even at dinner when she rejoins the crew at her place at the table. The Thousand Sunny herself has plenty to offer to the crew. Built from Frankie's heart and soul, she is a ship worthy of sailing the world, and the Straw Hat Pirates adore her. Nami's beloved tangerine trees survived the relocation, and now there is abundance of secluded, peaceful places for her to study her maps. Usopp has a workshop of his own, a lively, colorful studio tucked away in the lower deck of the ship. And Sanji has a kitchen polished with marble worktops and with space enough for him to adorn it with smells and tastes and masterpieces of his affections. An infirmary for Chopper, new storage spaces, little hideaways, and corners for each of the crew to call their own are things they've always needed, but Frankie's work is above and beyond anything they could have imagined. There's even a gym in the crow's nest. For Zoro when he needs it, the shipwright explains. And Luffy swoops the gigantic cyborg into a hug at the sheer perfection of the ship that they have already come to love. "Don't thank me, thank the Sunny," Frankie says, patting the ship proudly with a metallic hand. "She's just as excited about seeing the world as you are. She's been waiting for this." Luffy beams. "Then let's get going," he cheers, bellowing over the deck. Hey, Nami, how long till Fishman Island? Can we go any faster? When will we get there?" Frankie laughs at the navigator's exasperated sigh, but Luffy is undeterred as he vaults across the deck, rubber swinging low like the great arms of a monkey. "We get there when we get there," Nami says, twirling a lock of hair from her face. She holds the log pose up for him to see, the little needle twitching and shaking but determinedly pointing onwards. "We need to get through the Florian Triangle first, which will take some time. You know, we talked about this before setting sail." Luffy taps the delicate glass orbs, mesmerized as the compass spins. "Ah!
he says, laughing to himself, as Nami glowers a warning at him. He tucks his hands into his pockets, remembering what happened with the last log pose. We did? I was talking to Zoro. The navigator sighs and seems to decide that arguing with him isn't worth it. Where is he, anyway? I take it he hasn't gotten any further with manifesting himself? Luffy shakes his head. Nuh-uh. We haven't really spoken about it since Skypiea. I think he's worried about giving off all that lightning again. He's with Usopp at the moment.
Usopp's got some really neat ideas about trying to contain all that electricity.
Franky interrupts, calling up from the grassy deck of the Sunny.
He said he was going to try to use the dials you got from Skypiea. We're trying to think of ways of harnessing the energy Zoro releases too, which would be super.
Didn't the Arc Maxim run on thunder dials? Nami asks, looking from the shipwright to the captain and back again. He has one of those?
Nah, but he's got other types, like flash dials and flame dials. They're really super. We should be able to modify them. Might take a few days, though.
There's plenty of time before we reach Fishman Island, Nami says. Having Zoro capable of manifesting before we reach the new world would be ideal. We're still a pretty small crew, after all. Franky shoots her a thumbs up, blue hair seeming to gleam. Super! We'll see what we can do. It's not fair that Zoro Bro is stuck inside a sword all day.
Yeah!
Luffy exclaims, pumping his fists into the air. His Nakama are the greatest, and with their help, he's certain that their wayward sword spirit will achieve corporeality soon enough. It's about time Zoro experienced life among the Straw Hats to the fullest, sleeping and eating and partying and all. Zoro can come along on our next adventure. Usopp and Franky scarcely leave the lower deck over the next few days. And after Luffy's first and only attempt at assisting their research, the two shipwrights restrict entrance to the workshop to a need-to-be-here basis. The rest of the crew are sympathetic to Luffy's whining. You almost killed yourself with nothing more than a pot of paint, Nami reminds him, threatening the moping captain into submission with a compass. Robin laughs, wishing she had witnessed the mayhem. But even Chopper seems wary of allowing the bouncy captain into his beloved workspace. The kitchen soon becomes one of the few areas on the ship that Luffy is allowed to come and go as he pleases. But this is probably due to Sanji's no-nonsense attitude about kicking the captain through a wall rather than any real sympathy. On the odd occasion that Franky and Usopp emerge for more than 5 minutes at a time, at mealtimes, lest they faced Sanji's wrath, and during the lingering hours of daylight as they stumble into bed, Luffy is quick to reunite himself with the Wado Ichimonji, so accustomed to having the blade knocking against his thigh as he is. Lounging around the Sunny without it digging into all his uncomfortable places is bizarre. He hadn't realized quite how attached he's become to the katana's presence, and Luffy admits as such to Zoro when he rescues the blade from their shipwright's colossal hands. Only instead of being equally entertained, or, as Luffy maybe secretly hopes for just a little bit, embarrassed by the declaration, Zoro adopts the moment of pensive silence that seems to befall him whenever one of the crew addresses him directly. Quiet though the spirit may be most of the time, even at Luffy's side, commenting only when necessary, grumbling a complaint only as Luffy mocks and teases, this is a strange sort of hush. And one with a cause that the captain is still helpless to determine. It reminds him dreadfully of Nami's solitary bravado, of Sanji's muted subservience, and Robin's desperate sense of longing for happiness to belong. Only those are things that Luffy has challenged, dared to counter, stood against. How can he fight for Zoro when there isn't a pirate to defeat, a home to leave, or a world government to confront and light up what hurts his Nakama in flames?
Do you want to keep it?
Just as thrown by the question as he is by Zoro's soft tone, Luffy does nothing more than stare at the Wado Ichimonji for a moment, trying to scan the blank white of the sheath
for answers. While the crew have commented that Zoro's existence must be a solitary one, most of his Nakama have, in fact, pulled Luffy aside at one point or another, asking after Zoro's well-being. From Sanji's concerns over food to Nami's question of, how long did he say he'd been in that sword exactly? It is Luffy who has had the most intimate insight into the extent to which Zoro is probably not okay. That doesn't mean he knows what Zoro's going on about, though. Is it gonna go somewhere when Zoro appears? He asks, confused as to why the continued existence of the Wado Ichimonji is in question. Why would he not keep it, he wonders. He's aware that it has a large monetary value, recalling that confrontation with the clumsy marine, but selling it has never been something Luffy has considered, nor will it ever be.
No,
Zoro replies.
I hope not.
That's good, right? Luffy asks, trying his hardest to articulate ? With his eyebrows. Human vocabulary limited by syntax and sense. This is a nice sword. I like this sword.
Yeah.
Zoro says, slowly voicing a sound as baffled as the captain's. Yeah is not a particularly telling response. Yeah, what? And Luffy blinks, convinced they're having two entirely different conversations. I like Zoro more, though, the captain continues, trying not to dwell on his confusion. I like it when you're around. I'd rather have you than a sword. I don't know how to use it anyway. He laughs, recalling his hazardous attempts at wielding the blade. There's certainly a level of elegance required to master the art of swordsmanship, and Luffy doubts he'll ever acquire it. Rubber and bruises and ceaseless bounding energy as he is. The spirit seems unfazed by the concept. That, or he snatches up the topic detour so fast that he doesn't have time to be.
I could teach you.
Eh? Wouldn't that be weird for Zoro? Luffy asks, trying to imagine receiving instruction from the blade he learns to use. Teaching swordsmanship must be difficult enough without the complication of having the sensei doubling as the sword after all. And his mind conjures images of embarrassment and chaos as he considers the logic.
Well...
Wait! Luffy interrupts, a breathless shout of realization. Zoro can teach?
I could, if you wanted to learn.
You know how to use a sword?
Yeah, I am a swordsman.
Luffy doesn't so much brighten at this declaration as combust into the world's smallest, happiest star.
I think,
Zoro quickly adds. And did Luffy imagine that wincing breath or not?
I mean...
He huffs out in frustration, pushing back a fringe of scruffy hair, if it were possible.
Why the hell do you want me to be corporeal?
You're Nakama, Luffy declares, because that is a question he can answer. And Zoro wants to be corporeal, right? So it shouldn't matter what I want.
What? Yes, it does. How am I supposed to be real without you?
Luffy's ? Expression threatens to make a return, but he suppresses it with the realization that his first mate's outcry is in earnest. Zoro's already real.
Yeah, well, tell that to everyone else who's ever fucking used me.
Sparks crackle along the sheath, Zoro's anguish a deafening ring in Luffy's ears. The scabbard cracks against the floorboards as he startles, drops it, squawks, and fumbles to catch it before it clatters across the men's quarters. Skin against sheath, connection restored. Both captain and first mate blurt apologies. And Zoro, then, a please.
Fuck, sorry, I, please.
There's a knock at the door before Usopp's head of curls ducks into the room. His frown lifts away as he spots Luffy and the Wado Ichimonji, only to return again as the captain clutches the blade closer to his chest. Nuh-uh, Luffy says, rubber limbs seeming to swallow the length of the sword. Though not unkind, his expression is fierce as he addresses the frazzled sharpshooter. Zoro needs to stay with me for a while. To his credit, Usopp doesn't comment on the captain's clingy behavior. Okay,
Well, Frankie and I are going to be in the workshop if Zoro's feeling up to it later.
I can go now,
Zoro mumbles, snatching up the opportunity to escape the repercussions of his awkward confession. Later, Luffy declares. Zoro grumbles an unhappy sound, his voice rising in volume, increasing in stubbornness.
There's nothing to talk about.
Yes, there is. The other replies, drumming his fingers against the katana's sheath. He frowns, uneasy with Zoro's reluctance. But Luffy can be just as stubborn, and he refuses to let this go.
Great.
Zoro snaps.
So you gonna make me?
That's a sucker punch of a statement, if Luffy ever heard one. But it serves to calm the captain, rather than coax him into arguing. Realizing his hypocrisy and deflating with long, heavy sigh, Luffy rubs the scabbard in an absent, soothing motion, and turns to the sniper still hovering in the doorway. Usopp squeaks as though he's done something wrong, so Luffy is quick to reassure him, too, brightening the quarters with a smile. Zoro wants to go with you, he explains, stretching his arms out to pass the Wado Ichimonji to the surprised sniper. Usopp accepts it carefully, holding the blade as though it were his kabuto, or a possession just as prized. Luffy's smile slips, just a little. He'll be tangible long before you know it, Usopp exclaims, nodding encouragingly in the face of the captain's blues. Robin's really smart, and Chopper's working hard, and Frankie and I can definitely build something to help. We promise. And then, to Zoro, he repeats, promise. Before spluttering red-faced at Luffy's beaming grin. Yeah! Luffy roars, launching himself into the air. His hat scratches against his neck, but he throws his arms up undeterred. That's because my Nakama are the best! Luffy fails to coax Zoro into enough of a conversation over the following few days to even begin attempting to unravel whatever is plaguing the spirit. But unlike their moping, huffing captain, Frankie and Usopp have far more luck with their objective. This becomes apparent one afternoon as the Sunny bobs along the outskirts of the Florian Triangle. Gray omens are the skies ahead. Sunless days promised in fog and murky waters. Unfazed by the lurking haze, the crew busy themselves with fighting boredom as their merry ship approaches the uncertain sea. Luffy is eager for adventure, desperate for it, but he knows that sometimes there's nothing to be done except sit and wait and occasionally thrash Sanji at cards. You cannot have knocked already, the cook despairs, growling at Luffy's hidden hand. I swear, if you get 31 already. Luffy lays down an ace and two queens, and Sanji throws his cards into his captain's face. Face it, Sanji-kun, he's got the luck of the devil, Nami says, winking at Luffy's innocent grin. Maybe we should spend a little time in a casino on the next island. Ooh, that could be fun. Pretty sure you have to be 18 to go into a casino. Sanji says, shooting down Luffy's glee with an apathetic click of his lighter. The captain whines and slumps against the table, and the cook huffs out a mouthful of smoke as he laughs. We're pirates, Nami argues, gathering up the deck of cards to deal another game. We could sneak him in, no problem. Now come on, Luffy, I'll teach you how to play something more complicated. And could I bother you for another tea, Sanji-kun? Luffy perks up as the navigator begins to deal the cards across the table. She shuffles the deck with far more skill than Sanji, her hands faster, the motions automatic and controlled, and the captain smiles as Nami lets him cut the cards. Sanji returns just as she begins to explain the rules, and as he flourishes a steaming cup of tea before her, the entire ship seems to rumble. The decking quakes beneath their feet, lights flicker, spark, and sizzle, and the pots and pans in the kitchen clatter together as though trembling in fear. Yelling rises up from the lower deck. Luffy rockets through the ship, unheeding of Sanji's squawking confusion and Nami's fiery curse as she launches to her feet. Smoke clogs the corridor to Usopp's workshop, billowing up from the cracks in the door. And Luffy wrenches it open just as Franky does the same from the other side, one of his great robotic hands waving away the smoke as he coughs and hacks and laughs. Whoa, Straw Hat, your first mate packs a punch! Nami thunders into the corridor, almost crashing into Luffy in her haste. Sanji is hot on her heels, cigarette foregone for a frenzied expression, as he takes in the sight of the charred workshop and Franky's singed hair. What happened? Nami wheezes, squinting into the smoke. Shit, you've got a fire extinguisher down here, right? Oh, yeah, Franky reassures, still smiling, even as the sound of Usopp unloading one of the extinguishers into the room gushes and splatters behind him. I guess one of the dials overloaded? Hey, Usopp, anything left of it? Thankfully wearing goggles and thick fireproof gloves, the sniper ceases his cleanup for a moment to present the remains of the dial. Indistinguishable now, its blackened edges crumple in his grasp. But the two creators seem only thrilled by the fragile remains. Everyone okay? Luffy asks, not sharing the sentiment. Recalling the Wado Ichimonji's explosion on Skypiea, he ducks under Franky's arm to further inspect the damage to the workshop. Zoro's okay too? I think so, Usopp says, reaching to where the katana is propped against the workbench. The scabbard itself looks untouched, gleaming like new despite the catastrophe around it, and Usopp's padded gloves hold the blade in stark, grimy contrast. Yeah, he's okay, the sniper says, holding out the katana for the captain's taking. Luffy blinks in astonishment, and then blinks again as Usopp laughs at something only he seems to hear, before adding, Don't be ridiculous, we're fine. What? Luffy says. What? The sniper returns, eyes growing wide with realization. Jaw-dropping with disbelief, he stares at the Wado Ichimonji's beautiful sheath, before crying a sound of wondrous laughter, dark curls bouncing as excitement overwhelms his expression of bemusement. I can hear him! He exclaims, drawing the attention of the rest of the room. Zoro, I can hear you! Say something else! There's a moment in which Luffy can hear nothing but the sounds of Nami, Sanji, and Franky's confusion, before Usopp practically starts to buzz with glee. I know! Yeah, do you think the others... Hey, Franky, catch! The shipwright whirls around just in time to catch the Wado Ichimonji. Like Usopp before him, he stares at the blade for a moment, and Luffy can only wonder if he, too, seems so briefly distant from the world around him whenever he converses with the sword's lonely spirit. Whoa, this is super, Franky says, safety goggles glinting in the light of his smile. You got any damage that we should be worried about, Zoro bro? No? Super! It's good to finally hear you. He throws the katana onwards, and Sanji fumbles it as it bashes into his chest. What did you do? Nami asks, staring in wonder, even as Sanji emits a disbelieving noise and begins a startled chat with the sword. You're modifying the flash dials, right? Yeah, we were testing how much of Zoro's electricity they could hold, but I guess it got a little out of hand, Usopp replies, scratching his nose and laughing nervously. We're gonna need a better stabilizing agent, and maybe a way to channel the energy. We were thinking that if we could help Zoro control or contain the massive amounts of energy he releases, he might be more willing to attempt to materialize himself. Cause he should, of course, but I get why he's reluctant and all. Oi, Luffy, Sanji calls, holding out the katana. Nami swipes it before the captain can, but Sanji is unperturbed. He says he's tired. I thought he couldn't sleep. Luffy shakes his head, worried still for his first mate, but less so now that the explosion seems to have done no harm. He accepts the katana gladly, feeling its warmth from where the crew have held it. He can't, but he did go really quiet back on Skypiea, like he wasn't really there or something. Could be a side effect of releasing a ton of energy, Franky suggests. Energy can't be created or destroyed and all that. It has to come from somewhere. Maybe he should talk to Chopper, Usopp says. We'll have to tidy up in here anyway before we can do anything else. Luffy nods, agreeing with the idea, and slides the blade into place at his side. Is that okay with Zoro? He asks, resting a hand on the hilt.
Yeah, whatever.
Zoro replies. And then, to Luffy's astonishment, he heaves a great, roaring yawn. Chopper doesn't have an explanation for this, as they find, but it should be noted that the doctor isn't looking very hard through his textbooks, as he explains as such, instead enthralled by the sound of Zoro's voice in his ears. Robin joins them in the infirmary once she has heard the news, but Chopper has yet to relinquish his hold on the katana to allow her the opportunity to speak to Zoro herself. Like Luffy, she appears amused enough to let Chopper have his way, instead seeming quite content to watch the tiny doctor wiggle his blue nose and endlessly fuss over the spirit within the sword. Just because I can't see you doesn't mean I don't know when you're hiding something from me, Rorona Zoro. Chopper warns, looking quite adorable as he waggles a pen at the katana. Have you had persistent headaches? Feeling nauseous? Sore throat? Can you even have a sore throat? Can you even have a headache? Robin laughs and scribbles something else down in her puzzle book. Crosswords are beyond Luffy, but the archaeologist makes time, even in the busiest days, to solve a problem or two. The rest of the crew can often be heard calling suggestions to her from all manner of places over the ship.
I should think this has greatly boosted our first mate's confidence in achieving corporeality,
Robin says, tapping the puzzle book absentmindedly. You think so? Luffy asks, hoping she's right.
I'm certain,
she says, going to jot something else down, only to pause at Chopper's affronted screech. What do you mean? How the hell would you treat me? I just, oh my God, how would I treat you? The doctor spins wildly towards the captain and archaeologist, his frazzled expression begging for suggestions. But only Robin is kind enough to attempt to smother her laugh. Chopper will come up with something, because he's the best, Luffy says, grinning broadly. Chopper's ears droop, and Luffy doesn't have to be holding the Wado Ichimonji to know that Zoro emits a soft, wounded sound. I don't know, worries the doctor, casting an anxious glance at the sword. How am I supposed to run tests? If he's sick, I can't give him medicine or food or herbs. What if the Wado Ichimonji is damaged? Zoro, what am I going to do then? Do you just heal?
Yes,
says the spirit, even though Luffy doesn't hear him. But how? Chopper wails. What do you do? How long does it take? Do you feel pain? I'm a doctor. I should be able to help. His tirade lapses for a moment as Zoro speaks, and then the reindeer quite promptly begins to gush, squealing and giggling over whatever the spirit has said. Aw, shut up, you bastard! That doesn't make me feel any better! He hugs the sheath tighter, burying it in his fur, and then continues to make happy little noises that lead his nakama to smile and look away, the moment almost too intimate for their watching eyes. Robin flips a page of her book.
I think it will only be a matter of time before Zoro-san walks amongst us, she says,
as Luffy nods along in agreement, Straw Hat bouncing with his enthusiasm. Our next adventure will surely be something to remember, don't you think? Zoro doesn't quite dream, but then neither does Luffy that night, star fishing from a coast of golden foam. The rod is all his aspirations, the line his hopes to lure the sea. The basket beside him is empty, a night well spent as the lure bobs within the waves, dancing through reflections of the stars. He's never caught anything, but that's okay. The tide sails in anyway. The ship, they discover, sailing the empty sea, is in a tragic state. Loved once, but no more. The bare skeleton of a ship drifting ceaseless to its grave. And the man who they find there is one of the same. He introduces himself as Brook, tipping his moth-eaten top hat towards them, and makes a tinkering chime of a laugh at Luffy's dazzled smile, his impossible body of bone clinking together to sing a merry tune. Join our crew, Luffy says without delay, He knows nothing of this man, not his reasons, his goals, or even how he's come to be. But if any crew should have a living skeleton amongst it, then surely it should be the Pirate King's. Nami and Sanji are quick to voice their concerns, but perhaps their plan of preventing Luffy from doing anything ridiculous was naive of them. But it is Zoro who speaks up and solidifies the captain's will.
He's lonely.
Luffy nods and pats the katana's hilt, his decision made. What'd you say? He asks the skeleton, causing his opposing Nakama to groan. Nami wails dramatically, folding herself over the ship's banister as though Luffy's brashness has destroyed all of her strength.
Oh my,
Brook replies, taking the crew of misfits in stride. I would be honored, but to whom should I be addressing as my crew? Luffy laughs and leaps forward, capturing the tottering man in a hug. Brook exclaims in surprise and almost loses his balance, but the rubber man grabs his bony hands and tugs him along, excitement spewing 4 dozen words from his mouth. I'm Monkey D. Luffy. This is Sanji and Nami. Sanji's my cook and Nami's my navigator. And Zoro's my first mate. He's a sword spirit. He says hello. You can chat with him later, though. He'd like that. Come on, come on. Do you want to see the sunny?
When did I say that?
Everyone will be really excited to meet you, Luffy continues, ignoring Zoro's sigh. Is that a sword? Are you a swordsman? That's really neat. Zoro's a swordsman, too.
Actually, my love for music conquers my love for the blade, Brook explains, happily allowing himself to be tugged onto the sunny. I am a musician, if that should please you.
Luffy practically glows.
Oh, no, says Nami, realizing their fate is sealed.
Guess I better start planning meals for 8, Sanji sighs.
Usopp almost dies of fright when the towering skeleton of a man ducks into the kitchen, but Brook merely laughs at the sniper's terror and perches himself down carefully at the dining room table. The furniture has not been built with a 9-foot man in mind, but Brook seems only delighted as he tucks his knees up to his chest and squeezes himself into place.
This is Brook, Luffy introduces, beaming at the crew as they file into the room, curiosity compelling them to discover what they can about this new addition to the ship. He's our Nakama now.
To their credit, the remaining 4 members of the crew take this declaration in stride. Although Usopp has to be pushed out from behind Franky's back before he introduces himself in return. Tiny beside Brook, Chopper approaches their newest Nakama with a doctor's critical eye, seeming both awed and overwhelmed by the medical phenomenon that his body has to present. Luffy laughs as the doctor begins firing off a series of questions at 100 words a second, and the other medical marvels on the crew, Zoro the spirit and Franky the half-mechanical man, make sympathetic noises at Brook's flustered replies.
How long has your body been like this?
Chopper asks, now inspecting his patient's ribcage, after having rid the skeleton of his jacket. Truly, it is less of a jacket than most of Nami's wardrobe, so Franky had muttered something about throwing it into the fire before clanking off to find their new Nakama some clothes.
Oh, perhaps 50 years or so. The days are so terribly long with only music for company, you see. So you'll have to forgive me, as I do believe I've lost count somewhere along the line. That is, the grand line. Yo-ho-ho-ho-ho!
Brook's laughter rings with an infectious tune. The oven hobs, spit, and splatter like the cook's cursing tongue. But only the skeleton seems to find hilarity in the crew's dismayed silence.
50? But science!
Chopper squawks, almost toppling from the tabletop as he rears back in shock. Brook holds out 1 hand of bone to catch him immediately, instincts already compelling him to protect the littlest of the crew.
Science has once again established that it is insufficient at explaining all phenomena in this world, wouldn't you say?
Robin asks, smiling as Brook sets the reindeer back on his feet, and then, quite reluctantly, as though awed to be holding such a small and fluffy creature, folds his skeletal body back into the chair. Chopper blinks his disbelieving eyes, and some of the crew quibble at Brook's daunting misfortune. At Luffy's side, Zoro makes an unhappy noise that is nothing to do with Chopper and everything to do with Brook's lonely laugh.
If I may, the archaeologist continues, how did you come to exist in this state?
Why, as most come to experience the peculiarities of this world, I imagine. Brook sings songs. I ate a devil fruit many years ago, one that granted me an encore. It was only misfortune that led my soul to return a little late to my body, that's all. But there are many perks with being a skeleton, I assure you.
Would you classify not having a shadow as one of them? Robin asks, and the crew, as one, peer beneath the table to inspect the musician's feet.
Oh, no, Brook says, quite happily despite the ranging explanations of Flabbergast being directed at his patchy shoes. A thief once stole my shadow from me, and I have, unfortunately, very little chance of retrieving it. Usopp's head thunks as it hits the underside of the table. Someone stole your shadow? Why can't you get it back? Chopper squeaks. Who was it? Luffy asks, leaning forward in interest. Elbows on the table, a daredevil grin and bright starry eyes in hand, the captain's curiosity causes a collective groan from the less adventurous members of the crew. We'll beat them up for you.
Oh, my. Oh, thank you, Brook replies, fanning himself as though he has the skin to fluster at the attention. But I'm afraid I must decline. I would not wish to cause any trouble.
We'll beat anybody up, Luffy stresses, as though this is even a question.
Hear, hear! Sanji calls from the kitchen, muttering about a cigarette. Cupboards clatter as he works, the sound punctuating his speech. Face it, Brook, Luffy gets anything he wants. You want extra Parmesan to go with this cold, hard truth?
The crew make a concurring noise, but there is something in their eyes that suggests it is they who ensure their captain gets whatever he desires. Sanji waves a block of cheese at the table, and Luffy springs up to bellow over the skeleton's tinkering reply.
Me, me, me! I want extra Parmesan!
The cook glowers over the countertop, swiftly holding the cheese behind his back.
Sit down, idiot. You don't think I know that? Wait for dinner like everyone else.
He barks, flicking the captain on the nose. Luffy howls dramatically and clutches his face. At the table, Nami sighs and wrenches the rubber man into his seat.
So perhaps not everything? Brook laughs, accepting the cook's offer with a flourish of gratitude.
Frankie clanks in then. A leopard spotted something tucked in his arms. But if Brook seems horrified by the outlandish pattern, then he says nothing of the sort as he fusses and coos over the new clothes.
We're not that good, Nami grumbles, unashamed, before literally pinning the squirming captain down to the table.
It would seem to be an uncomfortable position for her, except she moves with such ease that Luffy may as well be made of clay, his protests soft and moldable in her hands.
He'll calm down in a couple of minutes, the navigator says at Brook's look of concern.
If we're lucky, Usopp adds, and Luffy snorts a burst of laughter into the edge of the table. Brook continues to insist that he cannot remain with them throughout the duration of the meal, and Luffy continues to ignore him. How delicious the tagliatelle is appears to be the only matter in which they can agree. So amidst Brook's soft arguments and Luffy's brazen denials and the exasperated groans from the rest of the crew, Sanji is the only straw hat to enjoy dinner. Yet, Brook's concluding compliments to the cook decimate Sanji's golden-headed loopy expression, the one that always makes an appearance when a guest enjoys his food. But this is probably due to the skeleton's declaration that it is the best and only meal he's had in half a century, and why, Sanji-kun, I would love to eat that again, rather than any insult the cook may receive.
Oh, does that mean you don't have to sleep either?
Luffy asks, grinning so widely that bits of pasta poke out from between his teeth.
Hey, hey, where does all that food go anyway? Do you have a stomach? Does it just drop out? Does that mean I can have it back?
What is it with spirits and not eating on this goddamn ship?
Sanji grumbles, collecting dishes with jerky, passive-aggressive motions as he tries to inhale a cigarette. Sleep is not something I require, no, but I can induce something like sleep in myself, should I wish it, Brooke explains. And no, I don't believe I do have a stomach, but where the food goes, nobody knows. Yo-ho-ho-ho-ho-ho! Luffy pouts, and Brooke looks quite abashed for making the captain frown. He tinkers more nervously, adjusting the two short sleeves of the spotted jacket, and then seems distracted for a moment with the feel of something soft beneath his fingertips of bone. Does this mean Zoro-san shares my predicament? He asks, blinking impossible eyes at the crew. He doesn't sleep, if that's what you mean, Usopp explains, twirling the remains of the tagliatelle around his fork. Sanji gives him a stern look before gesturing for the plate. Usopp blushes as he passes it over. Or eat, the sniper adds, blinking as the cook continues muttering darkly to himself. But I guess that'd be difficult? He sounds unsure, as if the sword managing to eat is something that ever could be possible. He rubs his chin with a contemplative motion, and Frankie's booming laughter rocks the Sunny's dining room. Here, you should say hi, Luffy says, thrusting the Wado Ichimonji at the skeleton. He can be a bit shy, though. Luffy, I don't think that's actually true, Nami sighs. Oh my, of course, Brooke says, taking the katana in an expert grasp. He handles it carefully, seeming to weigh and inspect the blade with a critical eye, and then bends a hand around the hilt, fingers clacking against the bone-white end. After a soft, would you mind terribly? The skeleton slides the katana from its sheath, revealing a blade sharp and magnificent to glint in the kitchen light. He draws it all the way, mindful to keep the katana away from his new nakama, and then emits an odd gasp as the Wado Ichimonji's razor edge crackles in a hyacinth blue. No, no, that doesn't hurt, he says, then, speaking solely to the spirit inside. I must say, that is one of the advantages of having a body like mine. I imagine there are advantages, too, of inhabiting a form like this, but yes, I agree. Perhaps only few. He nods along in agreement, and though they can only hear one half of the conversation, the crew hush to allow Brooke and Zoro their introductions. This is a marvelous blade, Brooke says fondly, examining the curved edge. I see that your captain has been taking care of it. Oh, really? Yes, it is a fine art. An easy mistake to make, I'm sure. He laughs, glancing over at Luffy with a smile of one privy to a joke at another's expense. The captain grins back, certain that they're discussing his more disastrous attempts at cleaning the Wado Ichimonji. But then he falters, expression lifting in surprise. Impossible eyes blinking back, Zoro's turn of the conversation drifts away as his attention shifts from the captain, astonishment morphing onto his skull as he stares at something in the room. Luffy tilts his head, curious to discover what has captured the musician's attention. Only, when he looks, he sees nothing but planks of wood and the far wall of the Sunny, the shelves and trinkets there. What is it? He asks, wondering what strange things they have yet to find upon the Grand Line. He has a moment to wonder if the shadow-stealing fiend has returned, and wouldn't that be awesome? But then Brooke's face lights up in the hue of the katana's glow. Why, I do believe it's Zoro-san, Brooke exclaims, gleefully, like a child, like he has in response to everything about the Sunny and her boisterous crew. For him, this is a day of new things, a grand day, and one to be felt all the way to his bones. And Luffy shares in the musician's delight as their nakama sputter in stupor. You can see him? He's there? Where? Maybe he is shy, Frankie comments, and the thwunk in response is Nami facepalming at the ludicrousness of these buffoons I call a crew. What does he look like? Usopp asks, peering at the space behind their captain's head. Zoro, can you make us see you? Wait, 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 Luffy cries, throwing himself up with an idea. He fumbles around in his pockets, tongue clamped between his teeth as he pats the waistcoat desperately. The mirror! We should use it!
He's probably not going to be able to hold it, Nami says, sighing her perpetual sigh as she encourages the captain back into his seat.
But we could hold it for him, Luffy argues, wiggling in her grasp.
Patting down his pockets is futile, but he goes as far as to tip his hat upside down, just in case he thought to store it there.
Zoro-san says, just describe me, Brook announces, sweeping his gaze across the crew in question.
And at their encouragement to do just that, he sets down the Wado Ichimonji before clearing his throat.
Well, I'm not much of an artist myself, but I see a young man, perhaps the same age as Sanji-san here, perhaps older, who stands with a slight slouch, arms crossed, yes, and broad shoulders, and he has quite a remarkable shade of green hair.
Green? What is he, a plant?
He produces all that light to photosynthesize.
The Wado Ichimonji crackles, spitting lightning in anger, and the crew erupt with laughter.
There are 3 gold earrings in his left ear, Brook goes on, giggling at the first mate's expense. But his expression is somewhat unclear, fuzzy, perhaps, and I can't make out the finer details.
He shakes his head in response to a question that only he can hear, fingers drumming against the katana's guard.
No, you're not quite corporeal, Zoro-san. You still sound as though you are speaking from the blade, rather than over there. Granted, the distance is not that great.
Sounds like you need a push, idiot,
Sanji says, motioning a dishcloth at the katana. So he's still connected to the Wado Ichimonji? Usopp asks, humming thoughtfully. Maybe that's why only Brook can see him?
Him and his moss head?
Sanji laughs. Nami snorts into her drink, splattering the table and Captain both. But Luffy only laughs.
And yet, we are all currently incapable of perceiving Zoro-san whenever the katana is in our possession,
Robin notes over another bout of giggling.
Brook-san, how exactly did you say you came to exist in this form?
Why, I ate the yomi-yomi no mi. I am a reviving human. My soul found its way back to my body before I reached the other side. Quite marvelous, isn't it?
Super! Frankie agrees, bellowing over Usopp's dark mutter of,
No, it's really not.
Perhaps your time in a spiritual body has given you a greater connection with our sword spirit here,
Robin muses. She sips the cup of coffee that Sanji had miraculously summoned for her, intrigue keeping her expression pensive, even as she scalds her tongue.
We saw him on Skypiea, though, or Luffy and Sanji-san did anyway.
Nami argues, mopping up the spillage on the table.
So nobody has to have a near-death experience.
Zoro-san says, Certainly not if I can help it.
Brook chimes. The Wado Ichimonji flares, sparking an angry white, and the skeleton titters guiltily before rubbing the back of his neck, bone-grinding vertebrae.
Oh, I apologize, Zoro-san. Am I not supposed to repeat everything you say?
Zoro's grumpy sometimes, Luffy explains, still staring intently at the place where the first mate is supposed to be.
With a determined hand, he reaches out to search the air for the Nakama that he cannot see. And beside him, Brook gasps a little breathlessly.
Yes, yes, he's right there!
Only, Luffy reaches nothing but air. Lips dropping, he scowls, motioning for the katana. Dutifully, Brook slides the blade back into its sheath and passes it over, but still cannot stifle a noise of surprise as Zoro no doubt disappears in front of his eyes.
Where's Zoro? Luffy asks the blade.
Here,
the spirit says, a stupid response if Luffy ever heard one, but it puts a lopsided grin on the captain's face.
Still standing in front of you.
Yeah?
Yeah, idiot. You're staring at my shoulders. Look up a little.
Luffy tilts his head back, trying to judge the distance between Zoro's invisible collar and his invisible eyes. Zoro doesn't make any further complaint, so Luffy figures he can't be far off the mark as he lifts a sunny smile from beneath his hat.
"Hi," he says, as though the sword spirit is someone he can perceive. There's a mutter of something from the first mate, inaudible within the bustle of the kitchen. Has Zorro always been in the room?
Nah, don't think so. This is kinda new.
Yeah? Luffy repeats, glad he hasn't been oblivious to the spirit all this time.
Yeah, I've got toes.
Luffy laughs, imagining a young man with bright green hair and a permanent scowl, wiggling his toes in wonder. And Zorro laughs too, only to be cut off by a yawn. The swordsman curses to himself, muttering sleepily, and Luffy cocks his head as he listens to the weight of exhaustion weighing his first mate down. Are you gonna sleep now? Zorro shrugs, or Luffy imagines he does.
Dunno. Don't think so. Think I might try?
He sounds uncertain, asking the captain's unseeing eyes and the crew's unseeing ears for answers, and then clicks his tongue as Luffy only blinks.
Any suggestions on, getting back into the Wado Ichimonji?
The captain shakes his head, black hair sweeping over the crow's feet by his eyes. Nope.
Helpful.
Zoro groans, yawning once again.
Oh, fuck it. I'm gonna nap.
Despite having no idea how Zoro is going to do that, Luffy inclines his head. I'll wake Zoro when something cool happens. The spirit scoffs, sounding oddly distant.
And you wonder why I don't get any sleep,
he says. And as he speaks, his voice begins to soften, until it is but a mumble at the brink of consciousness, at the edge of sleep, were it anybody else. Then there is no reply, no matter how much Luffy pokes, prods, and calls his name. And the crew watch on worriedly as the captain slides the katana back into place at his side. Is he sleeping? Chopper asks, expression pinching with concern. Think so, Luffy says, stretching out and ruffling the reindeer's fur. He'll be all right. He's Zorro. I'll wake him if anything. Something rises up through the table like a jack-in-the-box, cackling and bouncing and surprising them all, and more than one member of the crew scream. The wispy creature shrieks back, the white, almost translucent bob of its body darting up towards the ceiling, and Brook is not the only pirate to rear back in shock. The ghost, for it could be nothing else, emits a childish laugh and disappears through the decks of the Sunny. And, as the Straw Hat pirates wheeze and clutch their chests, the musician crashes over the chairs in his haste to reach the door. Luffy springs out after him, the thrill of adventure tugging him on, and then almost loses sight of the skeleton in the murk and fog that has settled over the ship. Whoa! Luffy exclaims, holding onto his hat as he throws his head upwards, neck stretching high up towards the mainsail. A great obstructing shape can just be seen through the darkness. The shadows of turrets and towers rising up from the horizon all around. And the captain waves his arms and hollers with glee. Hey, hey, what's that? That is Thriller Bark, Brook replies, bones clattering as he sprints across the deck. You must flee here. It's not safe for you. Why they would flee, something so blatantly awesome, is beyond Luffy. And he watches, dumbfounded, as the musician vaults over the side of the Sunny, still shouting about danger and this strange new place called Thriller Bark. Despite the moment of sheer panic it causes the captain, Brook lands safely on top of the ocean waves, and then, quite astonishingly, begins to run across the surface of the sea. Luffy's neck snaps back into place, and a rubbery jaw hits the floor. That is awesome! He bellows, crashing into the ship's banister. Franky scoops him up by his shirt before he can attempt to copy the musician, and Luffy squirms in the shipwright's mechanical grasp. Brook! Hey, Brook! Teach me how to do that! Luffy, now is not the time! Nami yells from the upper deck. Can't you see we're surrounded? We need to get somewhere safe. No, don't you pout at me, Luffy. Come on.
All hands on deck!
I thought the captain was supposed to make a call like that.
Frankie muses, hauling said captain away from the side of the ship. Luffy sags in the cyborg's hold, reduced to a whining ragdoll as he is carried up to the helm. Nami's scary enough to get what she wants, he says, and Robin laughs as she slips past, chains of fingers and hands blooming across the main deck.
Ow! Can't argue with that one,
Frankie says, depositing the captain by the wheel. He guides the ship at Nami's instruction, and above them, the sunny sails flap and billow as the lion figurehead swings over the horizon.
Don't think we'll be getting out of this one, though.
He's right, to Nami's despair. Thriller Bark has them trapped at all sides, a prison of an island, a tomb of a ship, caging them in through the Florian Triangle gloom. And Luffy is overjoyed at the opportunity to explore. Unwilling to share the sentiment, the crew fluster around the ship, fussing and panicking about the need to escape. And Luffy bounces along with them with a supernova smile.
All in favor of not disembarking?
Usopp asks, shooting his hand up into the air. Nami, Chopper, and Sanji copy him.
I'm impartial, Robin claims, and Frankie merely shrugs.
All in favor of exploring this creepy island that definitely shouldn't be approached and will likely get us all killed?
The sniper adds. Luffy is the only one to raise his hand.
Captain's decision counts for three!
That still puts you at a loss, Nami argues, sounding thankful for his dim-witted calculation.
Zoro would say yes,
Luffy claims, wobbling his hand about as though trying to create the impression that his is not the only vote.
No, he wouldn't.
Nuh-uh, says the shake of Luffy's head. He would if I asked him to.
Pummeling him into the deck underestimates the fury that Nami inflicts upon the captain's innocent smile. That is cheating!
I get the impression that this happens a lot, Frankie mumbles, raising an eyebrow at the archaeologist beside him as the captain squawks and squeals.
Our navigator seems to be under the impression that we are a democracy, Robin replies, tittering a laugh behind her hand. Democracy is an illusion, of course.
Youch! You don't beat around the bush, do you, sis?
Frankie asks, scratching his cheek. Across the deck, Chopper frantically tries to rescue their captain before Nami beats him into the ground, and Sanji and Usopp exchange a glance, sighing with equal exasperation. Robin lifts a smile towards him, her eyes of daggers bright with mirth.
Whatever gave you that idea?